Why?
Hey, Rash, can you bring in the luggage?
No.
Come on. Just grab it and bring it in.
Well, it's about time. Nice to have you back.
I know. It's nice to be back.
Yeah.
Oh, CIA training all over.
Oh, man. How did that work out?
That was fun.
And so now are you a human lie detector?
Well, I'm a certified analytic interviewer, and I can teach it. So deception detection is a small part of it, but there's a lot more to it than that.
So I'm not going to get away with anything anymore, right?
You couldn't before.
No, I couldn't.
How do you think I got accepted to this thing?
Right. And I am certified to blow shit up!
Rashi, you went through your CIA training too, huh?
Yeah!
No, he didn't. Rash, you stayed in the hotel room the whole time and watched Sweet Life of Zack and Cody.
Yeah, well, I'm certified to do that!
Hey, it's Almost Live with Paul and Misty. I'm so happy to be back.
Yes, I'm so happy to have you back. I am Paul Dini, and you, of course, are...
Misty Lee.
Misty Lee.
2 weeks away. That was way too long.
Now, was it at all fun? I mean, did it at any time feel like a vacation up in the mountains?
It never felt like a vacation. It was really nice, though. I mean, it was absolutely beautiful up there. A bear attacked one of the cabins.
Really?
But I met some super cool people. Mm. One of the girls that was a cabin mate of mine was in the foreign... visa granting. I don't remember what department that is, but she granted visas. And the other one was a detective from Hong Kong.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, they were really cool chicks. And it was interesting to see how people that do jobs like that function. You know, mm-hmm. Their names were Sarah and Penny. Penny was the detective from Hong Kong.
Right.
Sarah was the foreign interviewer. You know, they interview people and grant them access at the embassies. You know, and visas are not.
Yeah.
And it was just fascinating that this is what these people did for a living and to see how they function in real life, you know, because Sarah was super sharp and focused and Penny was very black and white. And it was just like really neat to have two such cool broads for roommates.
And so they were doing this as an enhancement of their other jobs.
The Hong Kong Police Department, I don't know exactly what department Penny works for, had paid for her way to come over to learn this, to come back and teach it. Because everyone who graduated the program is certified to teach the things that we learned. And Sarah was in the same position. She had to go back and teach the other interviewers these deception detection and micro expression things and, you know, like how to watch for this stuff. It was fascinating.
And will you be teaching people in micro detection, or are you going to keep that as your own
voiceover actors all over the world telling people they can't lie?
Magicians, though.
Yeah, magicians with the deception detection. Yes and no. I mean, we'll talk about it. I have to talk to IAI about how we're going to parlay this and dovetail it into something that's, you know, that's feasible from a business perspective, because it was a 2 week long seminar, and I don't think that anybody in entertainment would want more than a day, you know, like basic body language stuff and things like that, you know, like the 101 stuff, and it can really enhance your life and encourage communication. It's cool,
right?
But it's just a matter of making it practical and a good business decision for both them and me, you know, because they're primarily law enforcement. It was really hard for me to get into this program, and I guess as far as I know, I'm the only magician in the world with this certification.
Wow, well, that's congratulations!
Pretty cool. Aw, thanks.
Will serve you well in the years to come. I have a feeling.
I think so.
And there'll be moments, you know, that you're not expecting where you'll just be able to call on it.
Well, it just happened yesterday.
What?
We were at a function yesterday, and I smiled at him, and somebody walked up to us, and we were at a business function, and I said, wow, that is like some 101 bullshit. I know exactly what that guy thinks of me. And I showed Paul what the guy had just done, and Paul was like, oh my God, you're right.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was just like so simple and so basic and so spot on.
Just like telltale signs or the way he said something, right?
Very simple. Wow. Body language, and you know, I mean, just it was really fascinating.
I'm usually a better reader than that, but my defenses were down because of, I think, where we were, and also I was willing to cut the fellow a bit of slack. My spidey sense wasn't entirely...
it's not a spidey sense thing. It was just, you know, and he... I don't know.
He probably didn't even mean to do it. He just was doing it.
No, he was just... It was just a total social passing, super quick thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but he just very clearly has different opinions of Paul and me, which is... It's not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, it's good to know who you're dealing with.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And who to deal with in the future.
Yeah.
But it was really interesting and kind of cool. Yeah. I mean, you know, so it's already kicked in and I'm like, oh. But I really have to, it's one of those things, like I was talking to Maggie, who was another young lady who was there.
Right.
And she's an FACS coder, which is they look at little muscles on the face and they code. There are different general expressions. There's micro expressions. There are seven of those. But then there are certain muscle combinations. And these people are really good for research and things like that. They do what's called coding. And Maggie is a coder and she's a specialist in micro expressions. And she was also getting her certification to go back and teach a lot of this stuff and actually taught the portion of our course on micro expressions. Oh, she co-taught it, which was fascinating. And she's brilliant. But I was talking to Maggie and I said, do you find yourself doing this? And it's, she was absolutely right. Yeah. 'Cause I find myself doing it too. You turn it on and you turn it off.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, it's like, I'm not sitting here going, oh, Ezra, big fat liar.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, what am I telling her now?
Emily's all sitting totally on the couch with her arms crossed and hunched over, like, yeah, I got nothing. Yeah. But it's...
I was afraid you were going to turn it on. And
yeah, no, 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 not at all. Well, there's nothing. I mean, there's no risk here.
It's not like watching or getting years of education like me in sound and watching a movie and going, oh, they're using that sound effect. And oh, you can turn it on and off.
Well, sometimes you can't help it. If there was something like exactly what we were just talking about yesterday, where it's so overt and obvious, and you go, whoa, sometimes people blow you away with it. And then you can just, you say, oh, wow, that is really basic.
Going to be a geek.
You know,
for
whereas in a situation where when we were moving around this event that we were at yesterday, I started turning it on and off and watching people talking about current projects and, oh, what do you think of that? And just seeing what they really think without them knowing that they were telling me. And that I was talking to Yuri, who plays Ben 10. He's the voice of Ben 10. And Tara, his friend. I don't know if she's his wife or his friend. You guys, tell me what you are. But I mean, they're together a lot. But anyway, it doesn't matter. But Tara is super cool, and she's really into this stuff. And she knew, like, the micro expressions, and I told her what had happened, and she was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool! Because she's so into psychology, and it's not what she does. She's an actress. But she just is interested in this. And so we had a long time talking about it.
Well, Glenn Morgan and I read up a little bit on that stuff when we did
CJ.
Tara Prep. CJ, that was her ability. And I assigned her the ability without really knowing the science behind it, because when I came up with the abilities for the kids on Tower Prep, it was like, what would I have liked most to have been able to do to get through school, to navigate school in like a real world scenario, other than being able to work magic and make my enemies vanish and stuff like that? It would be like, who's lying to you? How can you tell? And when is somebody going to like jump? When is a bully going to attack you? How can you get the drop on him?
Well, I will tell you. Oh, what was the third thing?
Well,
you were
the other things were, how do I make people like me? How do I persuade people to my side, which is Gabe? And how do I blend in? Mm-hmm. Which goes back to my love of Zelig, you know, like, you know, the movie Zelig.
We've been watching all Woody Allen films around here lately.
But Suki's ability a little, you know, came a little bit from Zelig, you know, like the person who's unsure of their identity. So they only want to pass unnoticed and unharmed by anybody else, which I think is like the way a lot of kids, you know, go like, I'm going through high school as myself and I'm wonderful and I'm fabulous and I am who I am. And that's great. But for the most part, you know, kids would like to kind of get through without too much.
If they want to.
If they want to. But actually, you know, some kids in Tower, like Fenton, he didn't care, you know.
Well, the nice thing about Suki is she doesn't just use it to leave a trail of destruction.
No.
That was one of the personality types we studied while I was away.
Yes.
And that chameleonism is, chameleon specifically, is an acronym for psychopathic behavior. So you guys can look that up. I'm not going to waste your time with it. But I mean, that, you know, that ability to just leave a wake of destruction is with absolutely no compunction is true psychopathic behavior, and it does exist. I mean, we had to interview prisoners, and
it was
they were jailbirds. They weren't. There was nobody serious. I don't think anybody got anything worse than theft.
But there are people that helped you identify these things. People with like strong resemblances of these factors you're looking for.
Well, yeah, and we talked about it, but it was our job. They brought us in, and we had to cold interview prisoners and find out what they were in there for, why they did it, what the details of the crime were, because part of the certification is memory recall. It's cognitive interviewing, which is memory recall techniques and ways to get accurate information from witnesses and suspects and things like that. And to try to get not necessarily a confession, but accurate information, which is as close to the truth as you're going to get, because everybody's perspective of truth is different. And this is something that we talked about in the class. But if you're standing on a street corner facing your friend and you look over his shoulder and you see a car accident, you see the cars collide, but he saw a car careening into the intersection, but his back was to the actual impact, which one of you is going to say you saw the accident? You both are. Because he saw it coming, you saw the collision. And you're both going to have different accounts of what happened, but the police are going to need to talk to both of you because you've both got gems of information that they need to put it together.
Yeah.
So it's when you get those people in, asking pertinent questions, letting them do the talking. There's just, it was really, I don't want to talk about a ton of this because like I said, it's interesting.
And it was a class and you spent all your time doing it. Right.
It's not even just a proprietary thing. It's just fascinating, you know, yeah. But there are far more interesting things to fans to talk about, you know, but
I don't know.
Just,
it's fascinating to me. I'm sitting here going, wow, what else happened?
Maybe we should put a class together, you know, but it was super, super cool. And the people there, I mean, there were detectives there from Scotland Yard. Mm-hmm. There was a psychology professor from here at UCLA. I mean, it was just really fascinating stuff. But you were talking about the science of it. And there are some really great books. We could put a reading list together for some people if they want to look at it.
Yeah, that's cool. If anybody wants to know, please let us contact us.
I mean, there's so much that you know, it helps when you go into a meeting or a negotiation if you can read the other person and get a handle on
that. That's exactly what I was talking about earlier.
And in some cases, you know, like, it's interesting here because sometimes you'll go into a meeting and I'll get a sense that the person doesn't know anything what they're talking about, but they do have enough confidence to grab control of the meeting, you know, because they don't know.
Get the other people into a collaborative spirit as opposed to, and I don't know how it is for you. You know, I mean, for me as a magician, I don't think I've ever walked out to a hostile audience. I am very lucky. I've never really been heckled, except as Princess Magic, who asks for it and encourages it. You know, she's like, yeah, you know, I ain't a TV. You can talk back to me.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it's just like, oh my God, that's a Jonathan Pendragon line. She doesn't say that. You know, I mean, it's very encouraged, you know, if people yell because I'm in improv mode and like, bring it on.
No, but, you mix it up. Yeah.
As Misty Lee, I've never, and I'm not asking for one. So if you're coming to a show, please don't do it.
But if you want to see her turn into a honey badger on stage, go after somebody.
Well, no, I mean, Princess Magic, it's fine. I love when they talk back. But you know, like when I'm on stage as Misty Lee, which is rare anymore, because usually I'm either doing Madame Vivian, the seance character, or Princess Magic. I did a show with Jonathan, which we'll probably talk about next podcast.
No, talk about it now. It was just the other day.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a minute. But, you know, it's very rare that I do a show as Misty Lee, you know, and even that was a character. It was chaos. It was a mystic. It was, you know, so it's pretty rare. And I'm really lucky to not have a heckler. But what I was going to ask you and where I was going with this was, have you ever actually walked into a meeting with a hostile audience? Do you actually have to?
Oh, yeah.
Are you serious? Why would somebody who is looking for a creative idea be hostile? I mean, that's...
I had one meeting with an executive, which has become legend in the business. Like, people know the incident. You know, like in Calvin and Hobbes, you'll say the noodle incident.
The snowman incident.
It was something horrible that happened, and even Santa Claus. Is he the boy that had the noodle incident?
Yes.
Well, there was this meeting that I had at this company, and I'm not going to, you know, name names or anything, but within the company, the meeting itself was legend because the executive came in a deliberately belligerent, hostile, confrontational mood. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten that a couple of times from people. It's happened more than once.
At the same company?
No. Oh, well, okay. Yes, actually, but on a completely different project.
Okay.
It's happened, you know, once or twice, rarely, that somebody has wanted to start up with me because of what they perceive about me.
Okay.
And I don't know who the famous Paul Dini is. I never gave that term to myself. I don't. I actually think of myself as a pretty ordinary guy who works on a lot of things and tries to do a job as well as he can. But I can't deny that I do have a fan following. You know, that's why we're doing this, is people, you know, are interested. But I don't really look toward going into a meeting like a gunslinger. But I've had a few executives call me out who have been deliberately just mammoth dicks when they've gotten in there, and they just want to start up with me, like, so let's see what it's about. Let's see if I can get a rise out of this guy, or how good is this guy? And usually that's a mark of insecurity on their parts.
Absolutely.
And a mark of just glaring unprofessionalism on their parts. And I don't care that they've got
You had that one guy look at his shoe.
Oh, that I'll
while
tell
you.
Yeah.
Talking to him. Oh my God.
That's the legendary one. Yeah, it's like, I don't care how they got the title of executive VP. I don't care who they knew at boarding school. I don't care what family connections. Most of the types of executives I've had trouble with are guys who've gotten into an entertainment company because they think it might be kind of cool to hang out in Hollywood. And these are guys with very minimal talents themselves, very pedestrian, common likes as far as entertainment goes, very little sophistication. But they come in and they're kind of pals with somebody in the company, or they went to school with the head of the president's son or something. They're kind of lilies of the field, you know? They don't really have any creative ideas, but they have a weird mixture of arrogance and attitude that gets them a position. Or it gets them a position within a company where they can fail from one division to another.
Yeah.
And the one catch-all place they all wind up is animation. Because if, you know, you have this guy, and I'd say his medium age is between 31 tops and 24, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's an executive VP at an entertainment company that has some sort of family appeal. And he comes in and he's like wretched at his job, and he has no idea for the history of the company or the heritage of the characters or anything. But he fails around the company, and then like I said, he winds up in animation, which is sort of the catch-all. It's like, well, we don't really have to fire him. If we put him in animation, he kind of failed out of live action and this division and music and records and everything. So we'll just put him in animation because, you know, we don't want to lose him for whatever reason.
We hope he languishes until he just gives up on life.
Well, no, it's more like they actually like the guy because Hollywood does respond to a lot of bullshit. Hmm. So a guy comes in. All right, so I had this meeting with this guy, ostensibly in charge of this animation division of a large company. He comes in, arrogant up the wazoo. He had the luck to be there while his division bought some shows that were popular and then either sleezed into or somehow got into, you know, the catbird seat where he was perceived as a big, you know, chunk of the success of the show. But this is somebody who would never go into a situation to pitch something because they've got no ideas.
Yeah.
So he's loud and he's arrogant and he's cracking gum in my face, and he wanted to see a show. He wanted me to perform for him. You know, it's like,
I'm sorry. Dance, monkey.
Dance, monkey. You know, just like that. Or, sorry, I left my puppets at home, you know? I'm here to do something to be professional. All
okay,
right.
Okay, hold on. Just
let's put it on pause. Who was on the phone?
Freaking Pepe. You guys.
Pepe?
We get these calls all the time. You guys, we get these calls all the time, like 4 o'clock in the morning, that are certainly not for us. You pick up the phone and you go, hello. And then it's quiet for a minute. You hear, Pepe. It's like, nope, I think you have the wrong number. And then they get insistent, Pepe. It's like, no, they're so Pepe. And it happens so frequently. And at first we used to get really mad, but now it's just funny, that every time I go away, like when I was up at CIA training, I call Paul like really late at night or early in the morning. And he's like, hello. And I'm like, Pepe. And he's like, God damn it.
There's nobody named Pepe living here, you know? I don't. And it's like, are you calling for Pepe, or are you in
are
fact
you Pepe?
Pepe? You know, are you identifying yourself as Pepe?
If we ever hear a mwah, mwah, we'll know it's Pepe Le Pew, but so far it has not been.
I don't know. It's just every once in a while, or else we had this one guy call who sounded like an Armenian gentleman. He goes, hello. It's like, I don't. It's either Armenian or Russian or a mixture of both.
Yeah. Well, he was just incensed that I was speaking English.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, like, I tried to speak to him in English, and he seemed like a grandpa from the old world, you know, mm-hmm. who insisted that his grandchildren speak whatever language it was that he spoke. And I was like, listen, Poppy, I ain't your kid.
I'm sorry I don't speak Transylvanian.
Like, you know. Not okay. And finally, he was like, oh, sorry. And he hung up, you know, and I was just like, hello, hello. We do it to each other all the time.
That's our Romany neighbors, yes. You know, the ones we see going back and forth in the, what's the name of the wagon?
Avardo.
Avardo,
Gypsy
that's
Vardo.
Right.
Gypsy Vardo. Yeah, Vardo. I taught him a new vocabulary word the
you
other day.
You want one.
I do. I want one in the driveway so I can do seances in it. A huge Gypsy Vardo. I just want to paint it jet black with, like, you know, and just have it in the driveway.
Like, be Professor
that creepy,
Marvel.
That creepy old witch that has a Vardo in the driveway. Yeah. I got to get rid of the trailer first. So if you guys want to buy a trailer, call me.
That's kind of a like a low-rent Vardo, like a trailer trash Vardo.
The Professor Marvel one or the trailer out there?
The trailer out there.
Don't call my trailer trash.
Well, it's...
The trailer thinks you're trash.
Well, that's a nice trailer, actually.
Don't backpedal now. You're in trouble as it is.
Well, hey, I'm always in trouble.
Let's talk about your meeting.
Excuse me. I'm expecting a phone call from my friend Pepe.
Oh.
Has he called?
He just called Super Ego, so if you have his number, call him back.
Okay, I take the phone.
Hey, tell him I said hello, hello, hello.
So we left with you trying to be professional, but you were sitting with an executive who was expecting you to put on a song.
Well, he had been sold the song and dance, and his attitude was like, really? Well, I know all the players in town. I've never heard of this guy. It's like, well, you know, I am pretty well known to a lot of people in town.
Creatives
not everybody.
Know who you are.
A lot of creatives know who I am, and I'm good at what I do. And
yes, you are.
And so there are guys, if they don't know who I am, I kind of assume they haven't been around for a long time or they don't watch many cartoons. So, you know, I'm not the best known guy in the world, but still I'm out there and,
anyway,
and kicking. Anyway,
you were at this meeting.
But he just wanted, you know, like, hey, you know, like, you know, you're not giving me much to work on. It's like, well, you don't give me, you know, you have a show that you want about, you know, a boys action show. And I'm kind of listening to you as to what you want. And he, you know, he's a guy who's just like, you know, he's, you know, his head was around things like Glee and, you know, High School
Other things,
Musical.
Yes.
And those are the shows he, you know, he wanted to be doing. And it's like, okay, well, that's fine. But, you know, and so he's grudgingly also in charge of boys programming, you know, and someplace he doesn't want to be. So it was just a very hostile for no reason meeting, and it ended quickly when he was distracted by something shiny at the end of the hall and went off to see what that was. But it's also happened to me once or twice.
Tell them what he did with his shoe.
Oh, at one point he's telling me what his, you know, idea of boys action adventure is, and he doesn't much think of it, but he takes off his Bass Weegee and he kind of looks at it from all angles like he's never seen it before, and then he puts it back on his...
He took his shoe off in the middle of Paul's pitch and began inspecting the sole of his shoe.
Yeah. Like, I'm not worthy talking to, but he's going to talk to his shoe for a while. I think it was really only one other incident I can think of where a guy just sort of, like, came into the room. I was working on a show, and he's sort of like, well, you're Paul Dini, huh? You got a big fan following, huh? I do too, huh? It's like, well, that's nice for you. And I was aware that the guy had a big fan following and a lot of followers on the internet, and you know, people wrote him a lot of letters and everything.
I know who this was.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
And I will say that even though he was a little bit pissy up front, later on he did apologize, and he said,
that's
because
nice.
Because I never rose to the bait, and it's like, I'm here to do what you're here to do, ostensibly, and that's
my job.
Yeah, break stories. You know, sit in the room and come up with some really good stories and. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm here to be a team player. You know, if anything that I do off to the side, whether it's, you know, the comic book work or anything else or the animation stuff, I don't bring it into the office on the show with me. It's just not a part of my job here.
Mm-hmm.
If I write something and I might bring in a comic book and give it, you know, pass it around if somebody wants to read it, you know. I think I gave away copies of Jingle Bell that year, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, that's sort of like...
That's just sharing what
you're
into.
That's just sharing, you know, but it's
that
not...
That would be no different than making a mix CD and passing it out. You know, I mean, not to...
Yeah, here, check this out. I think it's cool.
Exactly.
I made this.
Exactly.
Is me.
That's not arrogant for
right.
you. Because you love Jingle Bell and it's something that you truly like to share. It's like a Christmas card for you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is. I mean, even though it's mass produced, it really is. It comes from the heart for you.
Yeah. And I mean, and very rarely, I mean, it has actually happened one other time. Same work situation with a different person. Where somebody came over to my office to shoot me for a Batman DVD, and it was not, you know, it was not a, where
not
I was
related
working
to
was,
what you were doing.
It was not related to what I was doing. And so one of the guys came in and was sort of like, being interviewed, huh? Well, you know, just doing it real quick before work hours. You know, there was no place else for us to meet, but it was still kind of like a sore spot.
Yeah, but that's not really a hostile. I mean, like the other situation that you described was a truly hostile meeting. And that was what we were talking about with the body language. Is that what I was wondering was, would you have cause to take this stuff into a meeting and at least get this person out of hostile mode and into collaboration mode? And it sounds like the answer is yes, absolutely.
Right.
You're very good at that anyway. I mean, this is like the body language and stuff like that, because you're so open and you're so warm and loving and approachable and all of those wonderful things that you just are naturally. A lot of this stuff comes natural to you.
Yeah. And also I think that one of the things, well, thank you very much. And
of course.
But I think
if
that
I didn't think so, I wouldn't have married you.
Yeah. Thank you. But also, I think it also comes from a place of comfort. Once in a work situation, if I truly enjoy what it is I'm doing, and I'm gradually, as I get older, learning to say no to certain things I don't want to do, not because they don't pay well, it's just I simply don't want to do them.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Evanier gave me some great advice that's taken me literally decades to follow.
Mark Evanier, we need to get him on here.
Yeah, we definitely need to.
Yeah, I'll call him tonight.
Yeah, because he is like the wisest of us all. You know?
He's very fun.
But he said
great stories.
He said every time, you know, he's taken a job for money, he's always regretted it. And he finds that is, was he doing it?
He's doing it now.
He's doing some.
Every time you look at him, it goes away.
Well, he's deuces here. He's giving us the toof. Sticking his lower jaw out and giving
He had some teeth out this week and Paul was devastated. He thought his dog lost his gimmick.
Yeah.
But he didn't. because it's coming back now.
Yay. Yeah,
Paul's so excited he's got his thing back again. Because he does this little like lower lip smile. His lip gets caught up. His top lip gets caught up in his bottom teeth, and Paul calls it the smile or the tooth. T-O-O-F. So we were talking about Mark Evanier. He gave you. I'm sorry for interrupting you with dog tooth.
Yeah.
So Mark
he's doing it.
Okay, now you interrupt.
The Boston Terrier is a perfect synthesis of the terrier and the bulldog, and so they're extra cute when they do the little, you know, little,
the little half bulldog.
Yeah, they look like the dog on the mug root beer. Label,
yes. You know. So Mark Evanier gave you sage advice,
and which was basically never take a job, you know, that you're just doing for money. I mean, you know, occasionally you have to work. You know, you have to.
Sure.
You have to take things that you rather not do, but if you have it, you know, never do it purely, you know. Unless there's some aspect of it you love. Not every job is perfect, but there are some jobs I've taken that I felt kind of on the fence about that I wound up truly loving.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, you do at this point in your career, you do, because we have had many, many, many discussions about the PIA factor, if you will. PIA being pain in the ass, for those of you that aren't familiar with that.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, you really discuss it, and it's like, well, how much does it pay versus how much do I really have to do here versus how much do I want to do this? Because sometimes when you get, when there are other people involved and it's not just you and the specific creatives, you've got to make a lot of executives happy, and then you have tons of people to answer to. It turns into a real circus. For you sometimes, and there are just some circuses that you would love to be in the center ring of, and then there are some circuses that you would really rather not attend.
And you also like performing. You know, do you want to? How many requests do you get to do private parties or kids shows or things like that?
A lot.
And it's just, the hassle factor is not worth it. Then
And sometimes the people are so darn nice on the phone, I just take the job.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just sounds like fun.
Yes.
Would you like to perform at the Skirball for the Houdini exhibit?
Yeah.
Well, let me think about that. Uh-huh. Yes, I would love to. Totally. Thank you very much. Well, it pays peanuts. Well, that's okay.
I've been seeing those ads everywhere. I've been dying to check it out.
Oh, come on. You should say May 15th. Yeah. I'll be there.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah. I think 2:30 or something in the afternoon. Yeah. But it's an afternoon show for families.
Yeah.
And I don't do a lot of family shows anymore. I do seances and I do Homeless Lady. I mean, that's not really family-friendly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going in and doing some of the stuff that we'll talk about in the next podcast, you know, and stuff like that. And
it's Houdini.
Yeah, well, I'm not Houdini.
No, but it's
you know,
about
and he
Houdini.
Won't be there.
No.
But it's the exhibit, and it's an honor to be asked. I'm in great company. There are four other magicians there, all of whom are spectacular. I'm thrilled to be on the bill with these guys. Micah Cover's going to be there, and I love him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, there's just a bunch of good stuff going on around this, and that weighs in.
Right, yeah.
And the same thing is true for you.
Right. I just signed up to write an animated feature. An animated feature.
With a beloved character,
a character that I've never written before, but I've loved since childhood. And when the offer came through, I said, not only would I crawl on broken glass to do that assignment, I would pick up that broken glass and cut the throat of anybody else who tried to get it away from
nice.
Me. Because I love the character that much.
Well, if you told them that would probably affect the negotiation for your salary.
Then we won't have to pay anything
exactly.
for this.
But it's they like, did. They paid you nicely.
Yeah. But
you
I
took the assignment and then the contract came in and they paid him quite handsomely, might I say.
Yeah. I mean,
it's
very nice. So, but it's certainly worth doing, and it's something that, I was thinking like, boy, I'm working on a bunch of stuff. I'm writing a couple of network pilots and everything. I can't just work this in. And then I realized, okay.
I want to.
The child in me.
Yeah.
The six-year-old is begging.
Well, not only that, but some of the things that you guys are doing with this character. I was dying. He was telling me some of the stuff he met with the directors today. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about some of the stuff that they're just kicking around. They're not even sure. They haven't committed to it yet. And I was rolling in the kitchen while I was cleaning out the fridge and swearing.
It's just...
which I was doing when you guys got here tonight.
Every once in a while, you just have to do something because it sounds like goofy fun.
Oh, yeah.
And it's all hard work and it's all arduous.
And you're working
arduous.
With people you love on this one,
yes.
too. Yeah.
And there'll come
love
a time about 8 months from now when it's 4 a.m. and I'm working with them and I'm going over a storyboard saying, none of this makes any sense, but it will make sense. And then, you know, it'll get done and it'll be out, I don't know, a year or so from now. Mm-hmm.
It's so exciting.
It's not really on the schedule, but it's something that I'm working on anyway.
Yeah, I was talking to him yesterday and I said, when is the deadline? And he said, we don't know yet.
Yeah.
And I said, well, come up with one so that I can knock 2 months off of it and make sure it gets in.
Oh, I've got a deadline. I've got a rock solid. Yeah, and in fact, it's coming up. You know,
uh-oh.
I actually... the outline is due next week, but
you'll have that done tonight.
Well, the story's broken down
you're
in my
so cl-
writer's
yeah,
office,
you're
but
so
anyway,
close to that. That's
it's and today we had a
you
joke session
it up today. today, yeah.
And then, you know, I'll get the script in, but I just have to juggle a couple of other things I'm writing at the same time. So it's right. just like, okay, for, you know, 4 hours in the morning, I'm writing Project X, and 4 hours in the afternoon, I'm writing Project Y,
and then Z,
you know, or on the weekend or whenever, you know, and get that finished up. So, but it's
sometimes Z, not at all, wink, wink.
What? Oh, Z. Well, yeah.
Talk, anyway,
talking about Z. Okay. But yeah.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Let's see. But you know, so it's fun, and I'm lucky to. You know, today I was at one of my other jobs looking at an animatic of an episode that's in the works for later this year. And I was watching it all come together and I was thinking, I have the best job in the world. I get
you
to
do.
Work on stuff like this.
But the nice thing is you're really, really good at what you do.
And you know, I work with nice people. You know, like I'm working on this project now. And when all the writers are together in the room, Jeff Loeb, Brian Bendis.
Can you say this?
Casey, Kelly, Steve Siegel.
The Marvel project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean... this animation project that I'm doing, and we're all sitting around, and all these guys have huge fan followings,
and they're also super duper nice.
But they're
guys.
Just real nice, and you know, yeah. there's
and
no
smart. They're really
they're
smart.
Bendis gives me a little shit because I have such an old computer and everything, but
we'll get you a new one this weekend.
Yeah, and then next time we get together, it'll be like, made you buy a new computer, huh?
How do you like your dinosaur?
Yeah, because when I brought down the iPhone, he looked at it and goes, you got jealous of my iPhone, didn't you? And I said, yes, I did.
Actually, it was my iPhone.
Your iPhone, yeah.
You know what? The reason Paul got an iPhone is because I wouldn't let him tweet on mine anymore.
Ah, I see.
He got really, and it was one afternoon, my iPhone was stolen twice.
I was noticing there was more tweeting going on.
Exactly. Well, my iPhone was stolen twice, and the second time it was stolen, I just went out because I was eligible and got a new one, and I got an iPhone 4.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting watching James Randi at the castle, and Paul was just seething. And I can feel the anger just dripping off my husband, and I'm going, wow, I didn't pay that much for this phone. What the hell is he so mad about? And I couldn't ask him because we're surrounded by a ton of people, and he was being pleasant to everybody, but I was getting that mean vibe from him.
Oh,
so we finally
I'm
get in the car.
Yeah.
No, no, it's fine, but because it didn't last long. And
yeah.
it was just a second. But when we got in the car, I finally got him alone, and I said, hey, what is going on with you? What are you so mad about? And he goes, I have iPhone envy. And I said, you ruined the whole night because you're pissed about my phone? And he was like, yeah. And I went the next day and got him one. I was
but
like,
also,
are
I think
you
that was,
kidding me right now?
I also think that was the day I was watching Bendis on his phone.
I don't know what your problem was, but I'm sure.
But
I
also, mean, you know, the other problem was.
And then he gets the phone and he leaves it here all the time. I can never get him on the phone, ever. Even at WonderCon, he didn't charge it. And it was the saddest thing. I had to post on Twitter and Facebook. If you guys are at WonderCon, could you tell Paul Dini his flight's been canceled? Because I can't get a hold of him.
I didn't bring my charger with me. And I bought a charger. I bought a charger downstairs in the hotel gift shop. And the guy said, I'm guaranteed you can charge this from your car. So I had to rent a car. And of course, it didn't work in the rental car. It was for the iPod, not for the...
Well, thank God you got it.
Yeah.
Regardless, thank God for Daniel Campisi for giving you the message.
Well, the other reason I bought... Yeah.
That's really... Thank you, Daniel. I want to publicly thank Daniel for getting to you.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really great.
I'm wondering how that eventually worked out if you just got a hold of him.
I was wandering around.
Electric Vinyl 01 on Twitter. That's my hero.
I was wandering around. I was looking for Ted...
Go him.
To give me my sketchbook back because he did...
Who had your sketchbook?
Ted Nafia.
Does he still have it?
No.
But it's here?
Yeah, he did that great shot of Zatanna with the girl split in two.
You never showed it to me.
No, it's in my sketchbook. He did a wonderful piece, but he was finishing it up in his hotel room. And,
you know what he could have been doing is charging your iPhone. Well, that would have been real helpful.
So.
Well, it's over. It doesn't matter. You're home now.
But
you're
the other,
safe and
the
you
other
found
reason,
out your flight was canceled.
The other reason I bought
because of Daniel.
The cell phone was the bird died.
The bird?
The bird in my old cell phone. I had that Flintstone model cell phone.
It's a living bird.
Yeah, it's a living bird who's not living anymore. But basically, my old cell phone, I would tell
the bird, and it would fly out,
and it would go to somebody else's cell phone and speak into it. And then, not only did the bird die, that entire species of prehistoric bird went extinct.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't use that cell phone again. It's a living clunk.
Yep.
And that was the end of
it. It was a death then.
The it's living bird, and I had to evolve to the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but now he's got the iPhone 4, which is pretty current.
That has a monkey in it.
Yes.
Yes.
It has a monkey on it, except when he leaves it at home.
He said leaving. Pepe wants to talk to your mommy.
Yeah, Pepe. Tell Pepe I'll call him back.
All right.
Get a number. All right. I'm being a snot. I think I'm going to go get something to eat.
Shall we take a quick question?
You got some questions, didn't
you? Yeah, yeah.
Hold on. Wait. We got to play that questions from the fans thing. Here we go. Hold on.
Questions from the fans.
right. Awesome. We have a question from our old friend, Elena Freed, Jesterwitch.
Hey, Elena, yeah. My girlfriend. Yep. How you doing?
All the way from sunny Alaska, I believe.
She's either in Alaska or New York. She bounces back and forth. She was in L.A. for one afternoon, and I zipped over to the UFO Encounter restaurant. And she was like, this place is so cool. And I said, I know, it's so awesome.
It looks like it's out of the Jetsons.
Well, and then they play that weird, creepy lounge music as you're going up.
Oh, Esquivel. I love Esquivel.
Yeah. So anyway, so what's the question from Elena?
She has a tower prep question. Says, will Gabe's high persuasion serve him well in the future after Tower Prep? Will he join politics, perhaps? Which is interesting because in my own head, you know, when I wrote the future destinies of the characters, this is one little future story I guess I can tell about Gabe. I always imagined that Gabe would be one of those guys, high-level political guy. He wouldn't be a president or a senator or something, but he'd be one of those guys who'd follow around a president or a senator. He'd definitely be the power behind the throne.
Like Cheney.
Well, yeah, even not as public as Cheney, you know, like he'd be like one of the entourage and he'd be very good at getting in and out. And, you know, it's
and
like
have a better and trigger finger.
Yeah. And it's like and who is with you there? This is Mr. Forrest, our special liaison. And he would be like the guy who just says the magic word and gets in. And he is in contact with whoever the benevolent ruling people,
hierarchy
who actually control Tower Prep are, who are looking out for the benefit of mankind, and he would whisper a word in a leader's ear. But you might see him with the President of the United States. You might see him with the Queen of England. You might see him any place around the world where he is needed to be to officiate or to put a word in that's going to trigger the balance of power for ostensibly for good, but you never know. Sometimes something seems
So the answer
already.
To Elena's question is yes.
Yes, yes. Gabe is going to be a high-level political weasel, provided he makes it out of Tower Prep.
Do you want to take one more before we go?
Certainly. This is from Dork Shelf Jeff.
Of course it is. What an awesome name.
Dork Shelf Jeff.
I know Dork Shelf Jeff.
I know Dork Shelf, yes.
Ray! Yes, I know Ray. Yes, okay, Ray. So can I just tell that story very quickly?
Oh, sure.
Okay, his nephew was like 4 years old. And his poor sister is trying to show me this beautiful art. She's an art historian. This beautiful presentation that she'd put together of several paintings passing over time, like American art. And she's clicking through this beautiful, beautiful PowerPoint. It wasn't PowerPoint, but whatever.
It was slides by Ray Strong.
It wasn't just Ray, but it was a bunch of things.
Yeah.
But his nephew is standing in the doorway without a shirt on, because he's 4 and it was Easter and he was way over chocolated. And he's standing in the doorway, kind of leaning on it, almost like he's smoking a cigarette. But instead of a cigarette, it's an upside down rabbit. So the ears and head are sticking out of his mouth and he's just kind of standing there sort of chomping on it all casual like.
Like Bugs Bunny and
this,
carrot.
Yeah, sort of, yeah. But like Bugs with a carrot. And he's just, you know, casually leaning up against the door, and this painting by Ray Strong comes up, who was someone who was a mentor to Pete's dad, his nephew's dad. And Pete is standing there smeared in chocolate, and he was on his sister's last nerve, and he was being good. I mean, he was just, you know, but he was just really interrupting a lot. Yeah. It was really funny. But this painting by Ray comes up, and she goes, "Now, Ray," and Pete goes, "Ray, I know Ray."
Yeah.
And shoo, he was sucked out of the room like a vortex. He was just taken away.
So much for my nephew's comments on art. I think Ray was like...
So funny.
I'm not sure if Ray was his godfather or not.
Like the smoke monster from Lost just sucked him up.
Yeah. It's like we've heard enough from you, kid.
Oh.
And the chocolate bunny was taken away.
It was just removed.
Yeah.
You know, it was like the vaudeville hook just... And it was just like a little... puff of smoke where he was. Ray!
And a half-eaten chocolate bunny.
Yeah. And it was just hovering in the
which
air.
Which I later
then,
made sure was not wasted.
And, you know, like the puff of smoke was there and the chocolate bunny hovered for a second and then thunk, and then it hit the ground and Pete was just gone. But it was so funny. I don't know. Maybe I'm not explaining it very well, but it was one of the funniest,
really
cartooniest moments I have ever seen in
and
my
it's
life.
Just, yeah, you know, he was just pretending to be part of the conversation. Oh, I know that guy. We're old pals. We go, Ray. I'm not sure if Ray was his godfather or not. But,
he was just hyper sugared.
But he was a very
close
member of the family friend.
Yeah. There was a question from Dork Shelf Jeff.
Dork Shelf Jeff.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Ray!
It's like...
Jeff! I know Jeff!
We don't know Jeff, but, you know...
We do now. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Jeff and I are old friends.
Where do you see the medium of animation headed in the next 10 years?
Can I be the medium of animation?
The medium of animation. Let's see. Wait a minute. First off,
channel it.
What?
You're going to channel animation?
Yes, I will
the medium of
the
animation. That is right. I mean, people have talked about what's the thing that Brad Bird always gets upset about when people call it a genre? Mm-hmm. The animation genre. He said, no, animation is a medium, and within that, you can do any genre. You can do horror or Western or anything.
Right. Yeah. Brad Bird is right.
Brad Bird is always right.
As is Dork Shelf Jeff.
Yes.
What is his question?
Where do you see the medium of animation headed in the next 10 years? It's interesting to say, because I think for one thing, you know, to be very callous about it, it's headed in any direction where it's going to make a lot of money.
I was just going to say
it's
that.
Gonna, so
way
if,
to head it off at the pass.
You know, you're going to see everything from, you know, puerile princess fairy tale movies. Those will continue because those will be a mainstay. Those will always get kids into the theaters. I think you're going to see it in interesting ways. Like, I think that what Robert Zemeckis did with his kind of motion capture, the creepy motion capture with the taxidermy eye characters.
I hate those.
I mean, it...
Character designs, I hate them so much.
I think that's sort of dead-ended, and that may come back. I mean, in some form or another, if they realize how to do it better, but, you know, it's, why do you have Jim Carrey, you know, as a cartoon of himself? And one, you don't draw it, so you can capture every nuance of him. Or two, just film him in live action. It's like this weird waxwork of...
Well, yeah, the problem is you've got every pore, freckle, and hair completely rendered to the point where the light is consistent on the peach fuzz on their cheeks, but their eyes are completely soulless and dead.
And dead and emotionless.
There's no lights
there. I think we've talked about it on here before, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
I've been on and on about this. This is a huge thing to me. Like, can you see how angry I'm getting? What did you say, Emily? I'm sorry.
It's the whole Uncanny Valley thing.
Uncanny Valley, exactly. Exactly.
Human without being human, the creepier it is.
And it's like, why?
Yeah, but you know, like I generally like Robert Zemeckis movies, like with people in them, like Roger Rabbit and Forrest Gump and a bunch of them. They're really good, but I thank God that they shut down his unit over at Disney because they were just wrecking things one after another. And he was doing Yellow Submarine, which is a perfect animated movie that does not need to be remade, except by money vampires who want to suck off the music again. You know, it's just like there's so many other better ideas, but to do original ideas. But also, you can't improve on that. You can't improve on Yellow Submarine. It is what it is. Just leave it alone. But also, I heard a weird rumor that he was going to do Roger Rat, like a sequel to Roger Rabbit, where the toon characters like Roger and Jessica were going to be traditionally animated, but all the humans were going to be that weird, creepy motion capture.
Unacceptable.
So it's just like better is his idea, or
so they were going to go back, redo it, and make it worse.
Yeah. Well, they were going to do a sequel to it. I don't know what they were going to do.
Unacceptable.
They have written so many sequels and prequels and other stories to Roger Rabbit, and there was always in the mid '90s there was all the bad blood between Disney and DreamWorks and everything, and all that got ironed out, and now Spielberg is a part of Disney or something. Anyway, they've made peace and they can now do another Roger Rabbit. But again,
first one's so original. I mean, it was only great because it was an allegory that was based in a book originally. They just adapted it to the Disney and Hollywood and Looney Tunes eras.
The other problem with that is that Roger Rabbit, in and of himself, has about as much charm as Heckle or Jekyll or any of the...
Actually, I like Heckle and Jekyll.
Actually, I kind of prefer Heckle and Jekyll to Roger Rabbit.
Exactly.
But Roger Rabbit was designed by nature of what he is to be a kind of second-rate character. He's not Bugs Bunny. He's not witty like Bugs. He stammers a lot. He's kind of a goof character.
He's even almost second rate to a Daffy or Donald, honestly.
I mean, like he aspires to be goofy.
He's like a Porky.
Mm-hmm. He looks at Goofy and goes, Goofy's my hero. Mm-hmm. And even Goofy, you know, is kind of pretty one-dimensional. So everything about Roger that was interesting happened in his off hours. You know, he's married to this babe, and he's, you know, he pals around with Baby Herman and everything like that. And, you know, is he unhinged enough to be a murderer? You know, the whole story and everything. And the charm of a cartoon character who is teamed up with a sourpuss. That's like a natural thing. And when they made movies about Roger, when they made three shorts after that, trying to, you know, recapture that feeling, he just becomes kind of a knockabout goon. You know, you don't really root for him. The world is sort of rigged against him. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's even at Donald Duck at his best. Donald could come into a situation, piss somebody off, but if Donald was technically in the right, he'd wind up winning the day in the cartoon. Roger just exists. He gets things smashed on his head.
It's like Ben and Stiller and Meet the Parents and the Fockers and all that.
Yeah.
He just gets slammed and you just feel almost bad for him.
Yeah, it's not that I dislike him tremendously. I mean, I like that movie an awful lot. And I think maybe, mm-hmm. okay, you could do something with him. But why? I mean, why go back and revisit something that was fine as it was? So I do, in answer to this, I see, well, you're going to get a lot of repetition. You're going to get sequels to everything. Mm-hmm. Walt Disney, his big edict when he was alive and making pictures was he never wanted to see sequelized Lady and the Tramp or Sleeping Beauty or anything like that. No, it was just, we've told that story. Let's go off and tell another one. You know, mm-hmm. let's challenge our artists. You know, you were drawing princesses in this movie. You're going to be drawing orangutans in this movie, giving them the same amount of life. And that's a lot of challenges for an artist. You know, what it is now is they latch onto something that's a cash cow. They milk, you know, how many Shreks have we seen?
And they milk it four. We've seen four.
Yeah. I mean, where would I like to see animation going is I'd like to see more independent films. I'd like to see as the technology becomes available to do like home animation and small studio animation. I'd like to see it go in that direction. And I'd like to see it grow up story-wise to move away from princess stories. Why can't you do a buddy comedy in animation? Why can't you do it like a, I think there's a great, this is just me, a great teen sex comedy to be made in animation, like a Judd Apatow mm-hmm. or a type
isn't that
comedy.
What Cool World was?
Well, no. Cool World was, again, Cool World had no vision. I mean, it didn't have a through story. It was more like the Dirty Roger Rabbit. It was about a toon world and about a girl who comes from the toon world. Okay. Where do I see it going? I see a lot of the same. I see some advances made. I see a potential market for independent animation films as the technology becomes more available and more affordable. As always, the problem is going to be distribution. How do you get the thing out there? How do you get the audiences in the seats? And most of the big cartoon characters in the world are controlled by corporations. And that's going to be the Goliath to the independent films. David is trying to get people, trying to educate an audience that you can see something that is a romance, that is a more of an adult story, that it's more of a drama story, a story where the characters don't necessarily win, and present it in animation and have it get an audience, because you're always going to go up against the Disneys and Nickelodeons and the mm-hmm. DreamWorks, who are always going to be shoveling the same old stuff because it sells hamburgers at McDonald's and toys and everything, and that keeps those companies going. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. So
so the answer is you don't know.
I don't know, but I have a pretty good idea.
You'll be waiting to see.
Yes.
We're going to end with one last question because Elliot Sirota, One-Eyed Jedi.
Yes.
One-Eyed, E-Y-E-D, Jedi, on Twitter.
Yes.
Writes, real crab meat or imitation? So Emily, start with you. Crab
imitation.
With a C or crab with a K?
Imitation.
Crab with a K.
Crab with a K.
Real. Oh my God, I don't know what I got into.
I'm with Emily. Crab with a K, 2-1.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Oh my God. You have to ask me, an Italian or gourmet, a cook, and the grandson of one of Boston's most prominent seafood restaurants. It's got to
be
real.
So far it's men against women.
It is.
K, men, C. What's going on here?
I guess it's K, convenience with a K. You can just open
no,
a...
it's crabs eat people if you throw them in the water.
Oh, you do have that problem with crabs eating
people.
I do
have that problem with crabs. I have a problem with crabs.
Crabs eat people?
They will eat any kind of meat that they come upon, and they
well, then wouldn't you
want to
eat them
bodies.
Back?
No.
I mean, they look like spiders, and I hate spiders, but I'm
yeah,
glad
to eat
them.
Then?
But
I'm like
glad
you
to eat
would
them.
Eat a spider?
You don't like
let's get this boy a
spider.
Camel spider.
But by definition, if you're against animals that
let's
are...
Let's cook it up,
that's
Ezra.
Scary.
Let's see if you will put
ones.
Your money, your spider legs...
Can we take the legs
is.
Off?
Uh-huh. I will take them off and cook them.
Look, if you will not eat...
Crab cracker. And you can crack open them spider legs and eat them.
If you're against eating scavengers or fowls, then you would not eat vulture or hyena either.
Also, I don't.
It's delicious.
It is all for you then.
Okay. Well, but I will enjoy. Eat crab anytime I can get it. Yeah, you know, Dungeness yeah. crab. I used to go fishing for crab and for crawfish. You take that stuff, you boil it up. It's absolutely delicious.
I was watching Anthony Bourdain in No Reservations. He was in Japan, and crabs the size of his body that he was eating, they looked so good.
Yeah. Oh. Soft shell crabs are great. Although I will say, you know, if for convenience sake, there are times.
Convenience with a K.
Convenience with a K. There is the alleged crab, K-R-A-B, legs in the packet.
Did you hear that? He
in the
like
in the package,
crab.
And, you know, and they sell it next to the cocktail sauce and the lemon.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can just snack out on that stuff. That's not bad. But yeah. You know, you really got to work for it. Like while you were up at CIA training,
you filled this house with disgusting shit.
I actually got a whole Dungeness crab and I cracked it all open.
Wow.
I'm sure there were many curry nights here.
And I mixed it with curry spices.
Oh, I told you.
I made a Bombay crab out of
the curry.
Oh, it was great.
I can't with the curry. I can't with the crab.
Well, you weren't here with the curry. So.
Which is why it's totally okay that you did it while I was up at CIA training.
It's like things I do in
CIA,
shame.
Not with a K.
That's why she cleaned out the fridge and threw out the trash when we got in.
Why do you think I did that? Because I opened the fridge and went, oh my God, it was just evidence.
Curry and crab.
Everywhere.
Curry crab.
Everything with a C. All right, so it's ladies versus gentlemen. Write in and tell us what you think. Which one you like, Elliot. Thank you for that. And so everybody let us know who's right. Crab with a C or crab with a K. And until next time, I'm Misty Lee.
I'm Paul Dini.
I'm Ezra Walker.
I'm Emily Elmer.
And Deuce and Muggsy are done licking finally that we're wrapping this up. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Pepe.
Oh, hang up.
This has been another episode of RadioRashi.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, let us know. You can leave comments and reviews on iTunes or directly on RadioRashi.com. We're also now on social network sites like Twitter and Facebook. Leave us questions or just like us. And don't forget, tell your friends.